Good day, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, January 21st, 2025. Our first story from the front page of the commercial news is Empowering a New Generation to Dream, and this is by Kayla White. Reverend Dr. Crystal Thomas called on the people of Danville to rise up and make their own dreams a reality in her sermon Monday at the Martin Luther King Jr. Community-Wide Celebration Service. Held at St. James United Methodist Church, the service brought together people from all walks of life to remember and celebrate the life, legacy, and lasting message of Dr. King. For Dr. Thomas, King's work, 55 years later, still isn't done. Though much has changed, much remains the same. Over and over again, I hear folks say, "I've never seen times like this." "That's because you haven't looked," Thomas said in her sermon. History repeats itself until somebody does something different, and it's our job to leave a legacy. Though she addressed everyone in the room throughout her sermon, she called on Black Americans to take responsibility for their lives and fight the ongoing social issues facing them, including poverty, the wage gap, workplace biases, and mental health inequity. It's our turn to make a difference. It's our dream. It's our turn to make a change for the next generation, Thomas said. It is our opportunity to move forward. We stand united and empowered. Several members of the clergy from churches across the city participated in the program. They were joined by public officials, including Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr., as well as Sandra Finch, Human Relations Administrator for the City of Danville, and Martin Luther King Jr. Program Chair for the MLK Jr. Celebration Committee. Elder Tyson Parks Jr., also on the committee, came to the podium to award the $6,000 2025 MLK Jr. Scholarship to Tavian K. Diltz, as well as a special $1,000 grant to Jakira Harris, both seniors at Danville High School. As someone who believes in Dr. King's vision, I advocate for fairness and empowerment for others to find their voice by addressing discriminatory remarks and promoting inclusivity, Diltz said, reading from his winning essay. He went on to share a story of speaking out against discrimination he witnessed in his workplace. Later in the service, Brett Dupree was recognized for his 25 years of service to the MLK Mass Choir, now Ensemble, as the musical director. "You sound so great," he said, addressing the ensemble. "I strive for excellence because that's what God is. God is excellent." Dupree went on to thank his wife, Carolyn, for her years of support, and Finch for hiring him. After the service, congregants received box lunches to take home, and several stayed a while in the church's dining area, enjoying fellowship and conversation. Our next story from the front page today is an Associated Press story titled, "Trump Returns to Power After Unprecedented Comeback." And this is by Zeke Miller, Chris McGarian, and Michelle L. Price. Washington. Donald Trump was sworn in as the 47th president Monday, returning to power with a promise to end America's decline and to completely and totally reverse the actions of the man who drove him from office 4 years ago. Trump overcame impeachments, criminal indictments, and a pair of assassination attempts to win another term in the White House, and he planned to act swiftly after the ceremony. Dozens of executive orders were prepared for his signature to clamp down on border crossings, increase fossil fuel development, and end diversity and inclusion programs across the federal government. The orders were the first step by the incoming Republican president to unravel the Democratic agenda of Joe Biden, whose term ended at noon, moments before Trump took the oath of office. A desk was set up on stage at the Capital One Arena so Trump could start signing the paperwork before an audience of cheering supporters wearing Make America Great Again hats. The celebratory event resembled one of Trump's campaign rallies, but with all the official fanfare of the presidency, including military bands. Earlier in the day, Trump declared in his inaugural address that the government faces a crisis of trust. Under his administration, he said, our sovereignty will be reclaimed. Our safety will be restored. The scales of justice will be rebalanced. Trump claimed a mandate to completely and totally reverse a horrible betrayal, promising to give the people back their faith, their wealth, their democracy, and indeed their freedom. From this moment on, he added, as Biden watched from the front row, America's decline is over. The executive orders are the first step in what Trump calls the complete restoration of America and the revolution of common sense. Other goals will prove more difficult, perhaps testing the patience of supporters who were promised quick success. Trump has talked about lowering prices after years of inflation, but his plans for tariffs on imports from foreign countries could have the opposite effect. Frigid weather rewrote the pageantry of the day. Trump's swearing-in was moved indoors to the Capitol Rotunda, the first time that has happened in 40 years, and the inaugural parade was replaced by an event at a downtown arena. Trump supporters who descended on the city to watch the ceremony outside the Capitol from the National Mall were left to find other places to view the festivities. At the Capitol, Vice President J.D. Vance was sworn in first, taking the oath read by Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh on a Bible given to him by his great-grandmother. Trump followed using both a family Bible and the one used by President Abraham Lincoln at his 1861 inauguration. Chief Justice John Roberts administered his oath. A cadre of billionaires and tech titans, including Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Tim Cook, and Sundar Pichai, were given prominent positions in the rotunda, mingling with Trump's incoming team before the ceremony began. Also, there was Elon Musk, the world's richest man, who was expected to lead an effort to slash spending and federal employees. Stopping at the White House on their way to the Capitol, Trump and his wife, Melania, were greeted by Biden and First Lady Jill Biden for the customary tea and coffee reception. It was a stark departure from 4 years ago when Trump refused to acknowledge Biden's victory or attend his inauguration. Welcome home, Biden said to Trump after the president-elect stepped out of the car. The two presidents, who have spent years bitterly criticizing each other, shared a limo to the Capitol. After the ceremony, Trump walked with Biden to the building's east side, where Biden departed by a helicopter to begin his post-presidential life. Trump followed Biden's departure with freewheeling remarks to supporters, revisiting a litany of conspiracy theories about voter fraud and grievances against perceived enemies such as former Republican Representative Liz Cheney, whom he called a crying lunatic. He spoke for even longer than in his inaugural address, saying, I think this is a better speech than the one I gave upstairs. Trump's inauguration realized a political comeback without precedent in American history. 4 years ago, he was voted out of the White House during an economic collapse caused by the deadly COVID-19 pandemic. Trump denied his defeat and tried to cling to power. He directed his supporters to march on the Capitol while lawmakers were certifying the election results, sparking a riot that interrupted the country's transition of peaceful transfer of power. But Trump never lost his grip on the Republican Party and was undeterred by criminal cases and two assassination attempts as he steamrolled rivals and harnessed voters' exasperation with inflation and illegal immigration. Trump used his inaugural address to repeat his claims that he was targeted by political prosecutions, and he promised to begin fair, equal, and impartial justice. He also acknowledged that he was taking office on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which honors the slain civil rights hero. "We will strive together to make his dream a reality," he said. Now Trump is the first person convicted of a felony for falsifying business records related to hush money payments to serve as president. He pledged to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution from the same spot that was overrun by his supporters on January 6, 2021. He said that one of his first acts in office will be to pardon many of those who participated in the riot, and he referred to them as hostages on Monday. Next, we have mixed opinions. Locals weigh in on Trump inauguration. And this is by Kayla White. Two important events took place Monday. Reverend Dr. Don Jackson reminded the congregation gathered Monday at St. James United Methodist Church Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday and the NCAA College Football Championship game. "I've got my snacks all ready. I know we have different fans here, but it's going to be a wonderful day," Jackson said as the congregation laughed. "Today is also the United States presidential inauguration," Jackson said, taking on a more somber tone. "Regardless of how we voted in our recent election, we want our political leaders to succeed, insofar as they succeed in promoting the common good." The question remains, then, as to what substitutes the common good. For answers to that question, the commercial news interviewed local voters about their feelings regarding the beginning of Trump's second term. Despite being a conservative-leaning county, Danville also has a large population of more liberal voters, according to the recent election data, with a little more than 49% of the 9,000 ballots cast being marked for Kamala Harris, the Democratic nominee. "I didn't support him in any way, shape, or form, so I'm not watching today," said Kathleen Orrington of Danville, adding that she thought it was telling that in the funeral of President Carter that all the presidents were there, standing with their wives saluting the flag, and he purposely would not. Orrington said, "We've never seen that in our country ever, a president that refuses to salute the flag." Regarding Trump's plan to sign nearly 100 bills into law on day one of his second term, Orrington and others are concerned primarily about Trump's plans to initiate more intense deportations proceedings in the coming months. "To try and deport all these people is just very wrong. Those people are needed in this country. Why is he trying to break up families and deport people who have good jobs and have been here a long time?" Orrington said. Jerry Hawker, a member of the Vermilion County Board and self-professed Republican, disagrees with Orrington's stance. "I think the next 4 years will be a whole lot better than the last 4 years," Hawker said, "especially when it comes to Trump's immigration policies." Still, Hawker said he does have some concerns about young people that have been here from the time they were little bitty babies and have grown up here. "I could give some compassion there." As a second-generation American himself, he said he is proud to have come from Irish immigrants who did things the right way. "I don't understand why they don't come in legally and get their background check and everything done," Hawker said. For local missionary Ann Wagle, Trump's lack of compassion for marginalized people could spell bad news for them over his next term. "I was in Liberia on a mission trip when he was sworn in January of 2017, in a sort of sweatshop," she said. "And the Africans there were glued to the TV, kind of dreading what his administration would do." Although she can't be sure how they would feel today, she said she's also heard from someone from Honduras who is concerned about Trump's next term. "Trump has never voiced support for marginalized people," Wagle said. Another woman, who prefers not to be named, said she was glad Trump was elected again. "I am hopeful about the next 4 years. He's got some good people that, if approved, will be in his cabinet, she said. And now we're going to turn to the obituaries for this Tuesday. The first today is for Gordon Ray Skinner. Gordon Ray Skinner of Danville passed away unexpectedly on January 16, 2025, at the age of 76. We will celebrate Gordon's life on Friday, January 24, 2025, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, Illinois, at 3940 North Vermilion Street. Private family burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, please consider contributing to Citizens for Animal Rescue and Adoption, or CARA, in Tilton, Illinois. The family requests casual dress for the memorial. Paul Boswell. Paul L. Boswell, 86, died Monday, January 20th, 2025, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Services and Crematory in 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. Clifford Cohen. Clifford Cohen, Jr., 80, of Danville, died at 8:52 p.m. Tuesday, January 7th, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. Saturday at Leek & Sons Funeral Home at 304 East William Street in Danville. Funeral services for the Army veteran will be at noon Saturday at the funeral home, and Superintendent Frederick L. Cohen will officiate. John Reese. John W. Reese, 80, died Monday, January 20th at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvedt Funeral Services and Crematory at 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. And that's the end of the obituaries for this Tuesday. We're going to return to the front page of the commercial news for one last story there, and this one is entitled Indiana to End Funding for Subminimum Wage Programs for Workers with Disabilities. And this is by Carson Gerber. Jessica Reynolds wants to make enough money so she can afford her own apartment and stop using food stamps and Social Security benefits to make ends meet. But that dream is out of reach at her current job. Reynolds works at Shares Incorporated, a nonprofit that employs people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, where she does small tasks like packing boxes or putting items in plastic bags. Wages are based on how much work is completed, not on hours. During the last 2-week pay period, that work earned Reynolds less than $8. "I view what I get paid as a slap in the face," she said. Shares Incorporated is one of 14 nonprofits approved by the U.S. Department of Labor to pay subminimum wages to workers with disabilities that are in what are known as sheltered workshops. The policy was enacted in 1938 through the Fair Labor Standards Act to provide employment to those who otherwise wouldn't have a job. Now, as employment opportunities for individuals with disabilities have vastly expanded in recent decades, Indiana is set to end funding for the federal program in 2027 and redirect dollars to services that help those individuals find jobs in the community. Reynolds, who is in her mid-40s, said that's a change she gladly welcomes as an employee at a sheltered workshop. "I want to do the things I want to do. And that means taking the steps that I'm trying to take to get myself out there and seeing what jobs are available, where I can make enough to survive," she said. While disability advocates laud the decision, some worry the move could lead to workers losing critical Medicaid benefits and leave those with severe disabilities without a job and sense of purpose. In the last decade, 15 states have passed laws ending the use of the subminimum wage policy, known as the 14 certificate. Six other states in 2024 considered legislation stopping the program, including Kentucky. But the bills didn't pass, according to the Association of People Supporting Employment First. In Indiana, state administrators for several years have been edging toward ending sheltered workshops by providing grants to transition to programs that help those with disabilities find private sector jobs. The tactic has worked. The number of entities using the certificates has dropped from 36 in 2022 to just 16, according to Michelle Holtkamp, Public Affairs Director at the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration. The new approach comes after lawmakers in 2017 approved the Indiana Employment First Act, which mandates that all state agencies work first to ensure that their programs and funding support individuals to find community-based employment. Kim Dotson, CEO of the disability nonprofit The Arc Indiana, said the subminimum wage policy today is outdated as more people with disabilities feel empowered to work real jobs earning real wages. At the same time, businesses over the past few decades have also become more open to employing them. Hiring people with disabilities is actually good business, not just good charity, because they are really good employees, she said. The number of workers nationally in sheltered programs dropped from 128,000 in 2018 to 38,500 in August of 2024, according to the Employment First Association. Today, fewer than 1,000 Hoosiers work in a sheltered workshop, FSSA's Holtkamp noted. Expanded training and work opportunities, coupled with pushback against subminimum wages, led the Department of Labor in December to propose altogether ending the nearly 90-year-old program. The agency is currently accepting public comment on the proposal that would implement a 3-year phase-out of the 14C certificate. One of the guiding principles of the American workplace is that a hard day's work deserves a fair day's pay, and this proposal ensures that principle includes workers with disabilities, said Jessica Luman, the department's wage and hour administrator, in a release. And we're going to turn now to the News Gazette for a story titled, It's Time to Get the Work Done. Barber School Leader Ready to Make History with Today's Inaugural Class. This is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. Danville Area Community College Barber School Leader Terry Guard is ready to make history. It's been a long time coming, and Gord is excited to welcome 9 full-time students to their first class today at the school's new home in the Village Mall. DACC's new barbering program is launching with the spring semester. It offers 2 options, a 2-semester certificate or a 4-semester associate degree. Classes run from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday at the mall location. Guard, a licensed instructor and experienced barbershop owner, is leading the program. He said it will take students about 9 months or 1,500 hours to complete it. Guard said up to 15 students can be accepted in the first group, but for some, a full-time class schedule doesn't work out. The program is only offering full-time classes at the moment. Students in the program are eligible for financial aid, and it has no prerequisites. The first class comprises 5 women and 4 men, which surprised Gord. That's pretty cool. I'm excited, he said. The Village Mall location features a classroom for instruction in the former GNC store and in the former nail salon next door. A 15-station barber clinic where students can earn salon hours by working on real clients. They will start on mannequin heads to gain hands-on experience. The classroom is equipped with up-to-date resources and technology to enhance learning. Guard said, Lena Hengson, DACC's Assistant Vice President of Operations, was a big help in decorating the site, picking out the chairs and getting items ordered. The clinic features a black and silver theme and has a chandelier. The mirrors at the student stations are lighted. The space also includes 4 washing stations, hot towel machines, sterilizer to clean the combs and equipment, hair dryers, Gord's office, a break room, and a storage area, and of course, in front, a barber pole that lights up and spins. Guard said students will learn the history of barbering, life skills to become a professional, and how to use the tools, including clippers, shears, and razors. After completing this groundwork, they will move over to the clinic, working on mannequins and then real clients. Students will spend the first 250 hours, a little shy of 2 months, in the classroom before moving to the clinic. Guard said the clinic will offer simple haircuts for $8. As part of the course, students will walk around the mall and hand out business cards, introduce themselves, and bring people in. He also plans to reach out to a lot of nursing homes, Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System, schools, after-school programs, and homeless shelters for the students to get more experience. Guard said, also, he is looking at hair shows. I'm just ready to get started, he said. It's time to get the work done. While the program is new at DACC, Guard has been an instructor for classes at Larry's Barber College in Peoria and Peoria Barber College. Guard said the site at the Village Mall is amazing. He said it's been a long process to get the program started at DACC due to state licensing and permitting and other needed steps. DACC officials had hoped to start it in 2023. Guard said he presented the idea and program to the now-retired DACC president Stephen Nacko at a Minority Business Owner Expo that took place right before the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic. Guard had just graduated from Larry's Barber College at the time. It was just me partnering with DACC made things a lot smoother, he said. According to the Illinois Career Information System, the demand for barbers is expected to rise by 7.5%. According to DACC, job opportunities in the industry are on the rise with more people needing hair services and many current barbers retiring. About 70% of barbers are self-employed, making it a flexible and rewarding career, DACC officials said. Nationwide projected employment is 66,500, with 7,200 new job openings each year. Guard said being a barber is a very lucrative career. This program is perfect for a variety of students, said Carl Bridges, DACC Provost, and Vice President of Academics and Student Services. Whether you're a recent high school graduate, someone looking for a side hustle, or someone wanting a new career or retirement job, barbering offers great opportunities. For more information about the program, call 217-443-8750. And finally, from the Community Briefs section, we have Art League Offers Class. The Danville Art League is offering a color splash party Thursday, January 23rd from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Eleanor Wesch will lead participants in painting a red cardinal on a winter tree. Painting is an acrylic painting with embellishments of golden modeling paste and optional glitter. Contact the Art League at 217-442-9264 for more information. And that takes us to the end of our time for this Tuesday, January 21st, 2025. Again, my name is Greg, and as always, it's been a pleasure to read for you, and I hope that you have a splendid day. Take care.